morning.
What a great time of the year. Hopefully for everyone, and just wishing everyone a real happy season here. It's getting closer to Santa Claus time or whatever. And I guess the only thing I could ask for is we all better be praying for some rain and snow. We need some winter out there. The great-grandpa says that when the winds are blowing from the east, it'll never rain. And well, boy, that's genius to think that. But he says if it's a dry December, you could get a wet January, February, March, April. So let's hope he's right, and not the weatherman. So at this time, we'll do roll call, and we'll see who's here. Angela's here. Thank you.
Here.
Vice Chair Young.
Here.
Chair Mueller.
Here. Thank you. We do have a quorum present. And at this time, our State Board Liaison, Tam, would you like to come up and say a few words how wonderful Sacramento's doing?
Good morning. You always pose such difficult challenges for me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm happy to be here to escape the cold of Sacramento into the warmth of the Bay Area. I was listening to some of the audience member complaining about the code, and I invite them to Sacramento for at least a little bit of a taste of a colder weather. But it's great to be here. Thank you for the work that you've done this past year and for the work that I know you will continue to do in the next year and the year to come. I always view the sort of, you know, last few weeks of December with a bit of nervousness, because it's like the lull before the storm. It's calm, it's quiet, we're, you know, doing family things, we're celebrating the end of the year, and then we know that come January we're going to kick everything back into high gear. So please, I hope you have a great holiday season with friends and families, and please do take the time to celebrate the tremendous contributions that each of you have made, and in fact all of us, you know, all of your staff has made to the important work of the regional board in this area. For us, I actually was in my seat reading an op-ed in the Modesto Bee today, and it's a sign that 2014 will start off with a huge bang for us when it comes to Delta issues, because according to the op-ed in the Modesto Bee, the State Water Board is in total opposition to the governor's water action plan when it comes to groundwater, and our proposed activities will just, you know, be absolutely detrimental to groundwater in the San Joaquin area, which is nice to know since not even I know what those are going to be, but we seem to be drawing as not unexpected a lot of interest in our Delta activities. And actually, for me, it's been kind of frustrating because it seems like we've been working on the San Joaquin forever, but staff tells me that they're close to reviewing all the comments that came in, and they're close to revising the SED, and we'll be ready to release a revision for yet another round of commenting and hearing in the next few months. That's for phase one, which is just on the San Joaquin. On the Sacramento side, we're still working with the Delta Science committee panel, whatever they're called, to set up two, you know, sort of independent panels to look at the issue of Delta outflows as well as in-Delta flows as part of establishing the scientific basis document for our phase two, which would which complete the water quality control plan for the rest of the Delta. Something that staff is telling me now will not be completed at least until 2016 or 17. So we're still discussing that internal work plan. I'm hoping that we can move things along a lot quicker than that, but you know how that goes. Also, I wanted to give you a heads up on groundwater. As you know, with the state staff, state board staff, released a groundwater concept paper and has been meeting with stakeholders to receive comments. And they've also requested written comments. And so the written comments are, I believe the deadline is this Friday. A lot will depend on what we receive in writing, but its staff hope at this time that they will be able to review, analyze the comments, and come back to the State Water Board with a workshop in January. The tentative date right now is, I believe it's January 22nd. It's the third Wednesday of the month, whenever that is. That sort of it hasn't been finalized yet, but that's when staff hopes to come to the board with a summary of the comments that's been received on the groundwater concept document and where staff would propose to go with respect to our groundwater strategic work plan. It's an issue that's a huge part of the governor's water action plan. We would expect that as the governor unveils his budget in January, there'll be pieces in it relating to issues such as fracking, drinking water program, transfer, and just all those activities that we'll all be engaged in January and throughout 2014. So, again, thank you for the work that you've done, all of you, including Bruce and his staff. I've especially enjoyed working with your AEOs this year on things such as wetlands, which I'm still hoping to get through the finish line, and with Tom on some of our cost of compliance issue. And I look forward to working with them into 2014 to wrap up and further some of those progress that we've made in 2013. You have an awfully, awfully awesome team. Congratulations.
Do you want to mention anything about the drinking water program?
Just that it, as far as I know, it's still the governor's proposal, and which he will consider as part of his budget to be unveiled in January, to move the drinking water program over to the State Water Board. He's, unless you've heard something new, there's been a task force stakeholder group that's been formed that's been meeting every 2 weeks for the last, I don't know how many months. Actually, they're meeting this afternoon in Sacramento, and I believe they have one more meeting next week. And the task group includes the water agencies, the local officers, includes environmental justice, environmental groups, and the idea is to identify. The idea is not to debate the question of whether the program will be moved, but to identify the issues that need to be addressed as part of the move. And so, because you imagine for some members of that work group, that was a difficult hurdle. But I've actually attended several of the meetings and found the discussion to be extremely helpful in terms of my better understanding as a state board member, the challenges of the drinking water program and the challenges of the local agencies that are involved in implementing those programs. And they've identified, in my opinion, some really good areas for improvements, whether the program comes to us or stay, you know, at DPH. The communication, I think, has been excellent that it's been developed through this group. So whatever happens, we look forward to moving forward on in that area. I think that's it. Yeah.
You didn't mention whether or not you'd gotten your own personal copy of the 2,500-page EIRIS Delta Outflow Project.
I actually expect that. Oh, by the way, just a bit of a personal note. There are three state board members that need to be confirmed by January 15th. So, talk about things happening in January.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I'll get back to you here, but board member Kitson can appreciate it. Our city attorney and myself were talking a little bit about that yesterday, and he goes, damn, I wish I have that account. Because I got a hunch it's going to ring up some cha-chings out there. Boy, you look at that thing. So that's a little humor there. So go ahead, Vice Chair.
Well, circling back humorously to the science panels on flows, is there any science panel either in existence or planned that is going to take under its purview the flow needs of the bay? I mean, we all talk about flow standards and what the delta needs, but the bay depends on flows for gravitational circulation, sediment delivery, habitat quality. And I think we would like it very much if the state board would take that into account.
Hint taken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Looks like 2014 will have an interesting, challenging year in a water world like everything. So, Pam, don't go too far.
We do have some introductions.
Yes.
Thanks, Ray. So I'd like Jim Bonk to come up for introduction.
Good morning, Chair Mueller, members of the board. I'm Jim Ponton with the Planning Division. I'm very excited today to introduce Laura McClellan. She's a graduate from Brown University a year ago, December of 2012. Before joining the Planning Division, Laura worked for an environmental lobbying organization in Sacramento. While at Brown, she grew to become very fond of water quality as a rower at Brown, and we're very pleased to have her. She's helped us a lot today with item 7, and we're very happy to have her here. Thank you.
Welcome.
And then we have Anya Starovoitov. Anya recently replaced Sandy. She's going to be working on the vineyard program. She was born in Kiev, Ukraine, spent most of her time as a child growing up in New Jersey, where she went to school. She has an undergraduate degree from Rutgers and a master's from Penn State. And while there, she studied nutrient losses from corn cropping system and looked at ways to manipulate soil nitrogen levels through the use of cover crops to improve harvest. And that work was published in the Agronomy Journal in 2010. Between getting her degree, she worked for the National Resource Conservation Service in New Jersey, where she assisted local farmers with conservation planning on their land. She's been out here for about 5 years, and she worked in environmental consulting, and now she's with us. And she's an avid trail runner, knitter, and a seasoned traveler. So we're thrilled to have Anya here as well.
Thank you. Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Thank you.
And I'd like Terry Seward to make it here. Or Alec Noggle, in this case.
Good morning, members of board members, and Chair Mueller. My name is Alec Noggle. I want to introduce Daniel Cohen. He's a scientific aide in the Groundwater Protection Division. He graduated in 2012 from UC Santa Cruz with a bachelor's degree in earth science and with a focus in geology. Daniel tells me that he was inspired to be in the environmental protection field by childhood visits to Montana, where he saw firsthand some impacts associated with lack of regulation. Daniel is also an avid bicyclist, a climber, and an avid mountaineer. And so if you see him, you may see him with his bicycle coming and going from work. He's hard to miss in the hallway. He's 6'2", he's got an infectious smile, and a real optimistic attitude. We're very happy to have him working for us up in the DOD program. Thank you.
Wait a minute. Do you mean those bumps and lumps all across the river? River floodplains in Montana aren't natural?
And if you want to know the back roads, you could follow Board Member McGrath. I'm sure you could keep up with
them.
No,
I cannot bicycle with young people.
I'm slow.
So, welcome. How exciting. We have new people and people that have a little longevity and change and times are going. But I think before we get too far away, I want to just... It's kind of the season of giving and sharing, and a lot of us forgot, as we get older, we kind of forget a couple things, but our executive officer has been our executive officer for 10 years, I believe, correct? And when we interviewed him, he was just a little boy, and so it's a good... Well, if you heard Tim... A heck of a lot has changed in this water world of ours, but we're still trying, and we won't let them get the Stanford thing going too much until after January 1st, and hope for the best there. But those Michigan folks look pretty strong, too, so it'll be a challenging time in the football world for Rose Bowl. But, Bruce, the board and the vice chair inner wisdom reminded me that, you know, for your anniversary, and it's a time of giving, that maybe we'll get you, hopefully someone has a camera. I don't know if anyone has a camera. It's sort of camera day to day. But we'd like Bruce to come up and give him a little 10-year anniversary gift and thank him for getting us through these past 10 years with some stability here at the regional board. So it's very special. So why don't we all go up on the stage and get a little presentation. Come on, Margaret. And please note that board member Abacobi is present.
It's not a lovely party.
It better not be.
No, it's a bribe for you to stay.
That's right. So that was on a serious note and a little bit more serious, but a little bit of fun involved in this next presentation. We know how much Ray appreciates the limelight, and he really likes to be in the forefront of everything. So we figured we could really pull him out here. Ray, are you here?
No.
Why don't you just come forward a little bit, and we have a number of things to... to share, and I know a lot of us live our life by the Chronicles horoscope, so Ray's a Gemini, and so this is your horoscope for today, Ray. Let the situation unfold on its own. Kinks will work themselves out, so that's a start there.
Working out kinks is essential to a successful retirement.
This is going to take a little while, board members, so please... bear with me. So we better start. Do I need to go to the mic, or can you all hear me? I have to go to the mic.
Okay. Well, the audience can hear you.
Okay. So this here, can you imagine Ray getting a certificate of recognition from the State of California Senate? In recognition for 24 years of outstanding work with the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board, we thank you for your dedicated public service and your numerous contributions to the people of California. Congratulations, Lonnie Hancock, California State Senator. Just stay there, Ray. You're not done. This is all the serious stuff. Wait till I get you. So now this is from the California Legislature Assembly. Again, certificate of recognition to Ray also. And this is from Rob Bonta. And so Rod from the Assembly presents this to Ray again for your outstanding service to the state of California.
There's two.
Thank you. And this is from the Water Board, also, Ray, a gift, and I believe it's from all involved here, so thank you for everyone that's participated in sharing of your resources for this gift to Ray. So, Ray, this is another beautiful gift from all of your staff members, so you can kind of keep track of where you are and keep time.
Yeah.
And so, thank you. Vice Chair Young, that's something, and then I have a number of things here. Since Ray is really from a long-time farming family, and he's going to have time, so on the coast I can't grow eggplant, tomatoes, peppers. Ray's going to grow them for us. So. I'm coming back now. Well, you know, you brought up the pumpkin thing. I mean, you know, these pumpkin seeds on the world-class market are worth about $100 each. So I won't be able to work for that, but I put together 8 world-class giant pumpkin seeds for Ray. His family a test out in the Clovis out there and see if we can. And we also did instructions. If you've ever been around giant pumpkin growers, they normally give you about 80% of the truth, 20%. So most of the pages are pretty honest, but we're not going to tell you. We don't want you to compete there. So, and everyone gave you a card, signed a card, so that's very special from all of us and your fellow workers. But this is from me personally, and a lot of you people probably weren't even born 17 years ago. Or you were just little kids in college or wherever. But when we started this whole deal here in 1996, 97, we would park it. And Board Member Abakobi was scrambling for a $20 parking place a minute ago here. We would give Ray 4 to 6 quarters to put in a meter for us to park the car at our whole facility. And so it was just amazing how we're paying $14 now to park. But you know, we're still at $100, so we're okay. Pam, wherever you are, you know, just pass the word up there. I see you guys got a gazillion dollars in the budget extra right now. So, but this roll of quarters is extra special because Ray has a tendency to go over into Nevada sometimes. We understand. He's pretty darn lucky. So. This roll of quarters is from Farmer John, and it's if he wins over $5,000 with this roll of quarters, Farmer John gets half. I always say Ray knows where the bones are buried, so someone, Lewis, someone's going to have to step up and kind of dig through the area here to find out where the bones are buried, so hopefully you won't be too far away, Ray, and just thank you for the friendship and all the great years you've served California, and we deeply all appreciate it, so thank you. And anybody else, they're welcome to say please.
Thank you.
So we're on Slack, just between you and this.
Yeah.
But hey, we still got three more weeks, so.
Mr. Chairman, may I share a quick story about Ray?
Oh. You know what? We could do like a roast.
No, when I came back to this region as your liaison, Ray was so helpful in just, you know, getting me, helping me to, you know, getting access so that I don't have to go through the pat down every time I come here for a board meeting. But one of his mission was to get me to have my photograph taken. Now, you may not know this, but I'm a photographer, and I don't like to have my photograph taken. So Ray took it on as, a personal challenge. He dragged me down to the photographer, not once, not twice, but three times for my photograph to be taken. And I have to say that I still managed to dodge it. So you can't retire until you manage to take my photograph, Ray. But thank you for all of your help.
Thank you, Ray. And thank all the staff for stepping up in all this process, too, because Ray is very special to all of us, and all of you are special. So it just think someday you'll have that opportunity to be up there, and there'll probably be a new board member sitting here, and hopefully they'll give you some recognition. They better. Otherwise, we'll come back and haunt them. So thank all of you for patience also during this process, but it is a great time of the year to be celebrating. And so I don't believe there's any other introductions, and so we can...
That's it on introductions, and so we can do public forum.
Public forum. I have no cards at this time in public forum, so we'll clear that up. And minutes of the November 13th board meeting... May I have a...
I move approval of the minutes.
Second.
Yeah, any further discussions or additions? It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So ordered. And Board Member Abakovi abstained. So item four, it's that time of the year again, how the days fly by. But at this time, we'd like to, with legal counsel's assistance, if I may appoint a... ask a nominating committee to be appointed. That's okay to do that.
So this is doesn't require a formal board action. This is kind of an informal thing where you appoint an ad hoc two members to avoid a formal subcommittee of the board to nominate someone in the at the January board meeting to act as chair and vice chair.
Correct. Thank you. And the only reason I went that direction is I guess there's been some controversy over nominating of chairs in a couple other regions out there right now, and they want to do it a different way, but I want to do it our way. So if it works. So if I may ask Board Member Kissinger to serve on that ad hoc committee, and Board Member Abakovi, please. And the two of you can kind of share your thoughts together and report back to us in November. Yeah, that's right. I want another year, please. Yeah, January. So... thank you for that, and the two of you can report back at the January meeting. So the chair and board members, item five, an executive officer report. Just quickly, because we have a lot going on today, we did have a chair's call the other night, and I did announce after 12 years of chair's calls on Monday nights, it could be my last. So
depends what the nominee.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't give me a plaque from the assembly or anything. They're just saying goodbye. Probably the most important thing we discussed quickly was about the mandatory minimum penalties. And it's been around for quite a while right now. And so they're looking at trying to how do we get a little bit more efficiencies out of it and things like that, and to make it a little easier for streamlining the hearing process. And I'm just generalizing a little bit here. And... maybe to minimize the legal arguments that are being forwarded all the time. And so and to try to get a fact sheet together to make it simpler for everyone to be involved in MMP. So that's probably the most important thing going on. And it was kind of a December week response from the chair, so we kind of got through it pretty quick. So that's all I have to report at this time on that. And so, board members, we'll start with Board Member Kissinger.
No report, thank you.
Vice Chair?
Jim McGrath and I met with staff to follow up on the trash workshop and prepare for this month's trash workshop. And that's all I have to report.
Board Member Abacobi? And Board Member McGrath.
I'll be brief, but I want to remind us all of kind of the whose shoulders we stand upon, and that we're not doing this alone or without some knowledge of our historical context. And I'm reminded of that because two things have happened in the last week, one joyous and one not so joyous. The East Shore State Park was renamed after Sylvia McLaughlin, after a long lobbying effort, and Sylvia was there. You know, Sylvia, for those that don't know, and I would expect everyone really knows, was one of the three founders of Save the Bay and really stopped not only water quality but kind of environmental issues in their tracks and sent it in a new direction. It's a joy that she's still here, but she won't be here for all that much longer. She is, I believe, 96. And but still here and still, I think, an example. And then last night, I attended a wake for Charlie Roberts, who had been executive director of the port while I was there and was a former executive director at BCDC following Joe Botovitz. And those are all names that I think we should realize are important to us as we go on and do that work. Charlie was certainly a great mentor to me and friend to me in trying to balance both the needs of the port economically and the desire to do beneficial reuse of dredge material. And he was just a genuine person with no artifice. So it is important to remember that we don't do this alone. We follow in well-trod paths.
Thank you, Jim.
Just a couple of items. One, you'll note in the report this month on what we feel is quite successful resolution of a problem that Sulahuli Reservoir with the discharge of low dissolved oxygen water into the creek that working with the Municipal Water District, they developed an elegant solution to that, which seems to be, from what we can tell, having a very positive impact. So initially the district was a little concerned over what they were getting into, but I think they came up with a very good solution to a problem that we don't typically see so commonly in our region, issues over reservoir discharges, but here was a case where it clearly was causing a problem. So we're very pleased at the resolution of that. One thing that's gotten some play over the past in the press over the past month to 6 weeks is the just the startup of the demolition of the east span of the Bay Bridge, and we are involved in that. We do have requirements that were set up initially in this board's waste discharge requirements dating back to 2002 that that demolition be done in a manner that controls any discharge into the bay and minimizes any potential for materials to get into the bay. One of the things that's come out of that is as they move forward with the demolition is they've determined that there's a certain amount of caulk that was used in the construction of the old bridge, and we found over time that caulk contains PCBs, and so they've been able to actually basically immobilize and are removing for separate containment about a cubic yard of caulk, which in theory doesn't sound like much, but at the levels of PCBs in the very low part per billion level that can have impacts, this is significant that all the PCBs that are contained in there are being immobilized and removed from the system. So we're pleased that both Caltrans and its contractor are taking very seriously our requirements to ensure that there's minimal discharge of any materials as part of that demolition. And I think over time, as we see the bridge come down, we'll be reminded. The press will probably circle back to this issue on a regular basis. But at this point, they are in compliance with our requirements on that.
Thank you.
And I think that's that. Oh, I will make a comment as follow-up on your note at the chair's call, the discussion of mandatory minimum penalties, MMPs. We feel in this region we have done a lot of the streamlining, that we have gotten it to sort of an early settlement of putting the MMPs out, getting them public noticed, and that if there isn't any significant comment on the penalty amount, then you've delegated that to me to go ahead and sign the settlement and move them forward. So we're one of the regions who very early on was up to date at issuing those. I know a couple regions are still catching up, but by and large, I think we're on top of that.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions or comments to the executive officer? If not, we'll do the swearing in at this time. I'm gonna turn my light on here. All relevant evidence that any person's desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, and third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rule of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibit, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise, please, or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
Thank you. Okay, so that concludes item five and the swearing in. Now we go to item six, uncontested A and B, correct?
Right. On the uncontested calendar, we have two items. We have no supplementals, and I'm not aware that you have any cards for those.
I have none.
So I would recommend adoption of the uncontested calendar as is.
I would move adoption of the uncontested calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Any further discussion?
Just to comment again that the staff work is excellent, that these are complicated issues, and to see them resolved and the I's dotted and the T's crossed is a mark of the kind of quality staff we have.
Is anyone here representing City of Millbrae? Yeah, thank you for being in attendance. Appreciate that. And thank you for working with our staff to...
you guys, your staff is really great.
Very good. Thank you. So at this time, I've been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So ordered. And moving on to item seven.
Item seven is consideration of renewal of the conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing operations in the Tomales Bay watershed. I'd like Laurent Milieu to make the staff presentation on this.
And I do have some cards for item 7, so if anyone else would like to turn them in, you're welcome to give them to staff.
That's preset 2.
That's a preset 2. Tom?
Is the light okay?
Depends.
Should we go to preset 3?
Yeah, let's do
let's
that.
Go to 3.
Because that's sort of shiny.
See, it's the screen, not the lights. We need a new screen. Ray?
Where's...
he's on his way to Clovis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want that.
It's the lights.
Yeah, there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. Just go.
I'll go.
Yeah, let's...
Maybe they had a holiday pageant on the stage here, yeah, and had those lights lit up there for us.
Good morning. I am Roland Milieu, an engineering geologist in the planning division in the grazing waiver program. At this hearing, we will be asking you to consider the adoption of the renewal of the conditional waiver of wedge discharge requirements for grazing operation in the Tomales Bay watershed. For background, the original Tomales Bay grazing waiver was adopted by the board for a 5-year term in 2008. So this is a generalized map of the Tomales Bay watershed. This map shows two main tributaries to Tomales Bay, which are Walker Creek, shown in, shaded in green right here, and Lagunitas Creek, shaded in pink right here. I can barely see my pointer, but you can see the pink area. Both watersheds drain in down to Tomales Bay, which is right here. Walker Creek, Lagunitas Creek, and Tomales Bay are impaired by several pollutants. Common impairments to all three water bodies include pathogens, sediment, and nutrients. Mercury impairs Walker Creek and Tomales Bay proper. So in this slide, I will explain why we are regulating grazing. The grazing waiver is necessary because it implements the pathogen and mercury TMDLs developed for the watershed. Poorly managed grazing operations are identified as sources of pathogens within the watershed. In addition, mercury is also impacting water quality in Walker Creek and Tomales Bay, and grazing is identified as a land use activity. Grazing could remobilize sequestered mercury in sediment and contribute to conditions favorable to methylation. The TMDL requires regulation and management of grazing practices to control these discharges. The grazing waiver implements the requirements of the TMDLs for grazing operations. This slide summarizes the land use activities associated with water quality impairments identified in the Tomales Bay watershed. Grazing, which is shown in red, although not the only source of pathogens in the watershed, is a common land use activity. Similarly, grazing is a potential source of mercury and sediment discharges in the watershed. As shown on the slide, other sources of pathogens in the watershed include confined animal facilities, such as dairies and equestrian operations, septic systems, municipal runoff, boat discharges, small wastewater treatment facilities, and wildlife. To be eligible to operate under the grazing waiver, the landowner-operator must have a grazing operation that encompasses more than 50 acres of land or less than 50 acres of land if identified as posing water quality threats, and maintain animals on irrigated vegetation or rangeland forage for a total of 45 days or more in any 12-month period. This map shows all of the agricultural parcels that can potentially be used for grazing in the Tomales Bay watershed. The Tomales Bay watershed includes the area within the heavy black line. So, right here. It consists of 380 parcels that make up approximately 90% of the total agricultural lands in the area. As shown in green, 97 property owners encompassing approximately 68,000 acres have enrolled in our grazing waiver program to date. As shown in yellow, to date, 48 property owners have been exempted from the program. There remain some parcels potentially used for grazing that we need to follow up on, as shown in brown, to see if they are eligible for the waiver. So to comply with the waiver, grazing facilities landowners need to first submit to the board a notice of intent to comply with the requirements of the waiver, or submit a notice of non-applicability to be considered for exemption. Second, prepare and maintain a ranch plan designed to minimize discharges of pathogens, sediment, and nutrients from their ranch. Third, implement, inspect, and maintain management practices identified in the ranch plan. Fourth, submit annual certification to the board. So let's review what's new in the tentative, in the proposed tentative order. The 2013 grazing waiver requires measurement and reporting of residual dry matter, which I will call RDM. RDM is a measure of plant materials or vegetative stubble remaining on the ground after a growing season. RDM is a good indicator of a healthy pasture. Overgrazing potentially may result in bare soils that may be subject to sheet erosion, leading to off-site sediment transport. Measurement and reporting RDM is also consistent with the Napa-Sonoma grazing waiver adopted in 2011. Secondly, we attach notice of non-applicability and annual certification templates to the waiver. And then third, one addition to the tentative order lets the regulated community know that we plan on providing 72 hours notice that we will be conducting a ranch inspection. So what's the same? Where there are still no fees, the ranch plan remains on site and is to be made available to water board staff during facility inspections, and those enrolled under the 2008 waiver do not need to reapply. So the ranch plan is to include a ranch map or air photo of the facility, an inventory of resources such as pastures, animal service areas, water sources, and etc., an assessment of ranch conditions consistent with the assessment checklist provided in attachment F of the tentative order. This checklist identifies controllable discharge points for pathogens, nutrients, and sediments. Management practices currently being implemented at the ranch. An implementation schedule for newly selected management practices, ranch improvements, and road erosion controls. And then lastly, the ranch plan must include a compliance reporting element describing how the landowner operator is to verify that management practices are being implemented and achieving waiver conditions. This compliance reporting will provide feedback for updating the ranch plan. So this is an example of a ranch plan created through collaborative efforts. Water board staff endorses this template, and it is currently posted on our grazing waiver program webpage. Should other plans, templates be developed, they too will be considered for web posting. So a very important element of a ranch plan is identification of management practices to minimize pathogens, nutrients, and sediment discharges. This slide shows four examples of management practices that a rancher might use. So clockwise, starting at the upper left, we see an example of a watering trough that provides off-creek water for the animals. So of course, right here. Moving to the upper right of the slide, we see an example of riparian fencing preventing cattle from reaching the creek. And right here. In the lower right, we see an example of a reinforced creek crossing to limit soil erosion during cattle movement through a creek bed. And our last example, in the lower left, shows a mineral block designed to attract cattle toward it and away from biologically sensitive areas. So in cooperation with the landowner operator, we'll be conducting follow-up inspections to assure compliance with the grazing waiver. During our inspection, we will review the ranch plan, including the completeness of the ranch plan, wet, dry weather inspection records, RDM measurements, annual reporting compliance. A second part of the inspection will involve the review of site conditions with the landowner operator. During this phase of the inspection, we will be looking at management practices implemented at the ranch and the need for additional actions. So before I talk about our public outreach, we would like to thank the stakeholders, some of whom are here today, for their time, guidance, and valuable input. We noticed the tentative order for a 30-day public comment period on September 16th. We had three public meetings to present information about the tentative order. We were invited to present at two meetings, the Marin County Farm Bureau and the Sonoma County Animal Committee meeting. And we hosted one workshop on October 3rd in the Tomales Bay watershed to introduce and discuss the tentative order. So we received nine sets of comments on the tentative order from the parties listed on the slide. And the next two slides will summarize the comments and our responses. So I'll just leave this slide for a couple seconds. It shows the various entities that commented. And once again, you know, we would like to thank these entities for providing these valuable inputs. So the, you know, I'm going to be discussing the comments in numbered fashion. So the first comment that we received, some set of comments we received, commenters raised concern about our use of RDM values in a regulatory context and the challenges of measuring and validating RDM. Our response is, we agree. RDM will not be considered a regulatory standard. RDM is a tool used to assess grazing pasture health and adjust management practices as needed. Assessments measured below minimum RDM threshold should prompt the landowner operator to determine if the implementation of additional management practices is warranted to conserve soils from erosion. Second, ranchers raise concerns that the tentative order assumes that all ranches discharge waste. Our response is, the Tomales Bay watershed, the Tomales Bay pathogens TMDL and the Walker Creek and Tomales Bay mercury TMDLs identified grazing operation as potentially discharging waste to the waters of the state. The tentative order implements these TMDLs and defines landowners operators conducting grazing operation on parcels greater than 50 acres for inclusion in the waiver. Should a landowner operator be able to demonstrate that their ranch does not discharge to waters of the state, they can submit a notice of non-applicability to the board for consideration and exemption from the program. Third, commenters raise concerns about the attainability of the pathogen TMDL because of background levels of pathogens from resident wildlife. The waiver does not require control of wildlife sources. Our response is, the pathogen TMDL identified resident wildlife as a source of pathogens. The grazing waiver does not require control of sources of pathogens from resident wildlife. If human-caused sources of pathogens are controlled and wildlife contributions are determined to be the cause of exceedances of standards, the TMDL targets and allocation scheme will be revisited as part of adaptive implementation. Fourth, some commenters express concern that if there has been any improvement in water quality, it has not translated into watershed scale improvements or reductions in pathogens, nutrients, and sediment loading. Our response is, we agree that on a watershed-wide perspective, the available water quality data indicate that additional improvement is still necessary, although some improvement have been observed. We acknowledge ranchers are implementing management practices and taking action to minimize discharges. We believe, however, additional management practices are required. We will continue to monitor and assess water quality conditions in the watershed. We will be evaluating the annual certification and the need for further management practices over this next waiver term. In addition, other source control actions required by the TMDL are in process. We expect improvements to take time. Fifth, we received comments regarding the efficacy and sufficiency of the grazing management practices implemented to date. Our response is, we are working with the RCD and others to evaluate where management practices have been implemented and where they have been effective. We anticipate working with stakeholders to refine our monitoring approach to help focus and assess the effectiveness of management actions. We have a presence in the watershed through our 319 grant program, and as mentioned earlier, expected to be in the field conducting inspection next year. So this slide concludes my presentation, and I want to thank you for your time, and I'm available to answer any question you may have. Thank you.
Okay, get the lights working again here. Yeah. The real lights here. Board members, any comments or questions? Board Member Kissinger?
A couple quick questions. So for parcels that are less than 50 acres on which there's grazing, it's just not covered at all?
They would be covered if we detected water quality impairments, if we had water to quality concerns for these properties.
Vice Chair?
Yes, I noticed that as part of the waiver, there is the possibility of having third-party programs, and I believe we discussed this when we adopted the waiver originally. Can you bring us up to date on whether there are any approved third-party programs yet and remind us of what happened to the suggestion that the CDQAP, California Dairy Quality Assurance Program, maybe, something like that, might be used as a third-party program. You'll correct me if I know I got the acronym right, but I don't know whether I got the words right.
I'm Jim Ponton with the Planning Division. To date, there have been no third parties that have approached us for EO approval of their program. We do have Fish Friendly Farming through a grant that's active in developing a rangeland management element to their program. I think that's more in response to the Napa Sonoma grazing waiver that Laurent talked about that was adopted in 2011.
Fish Friendly Farming applicable to this waiver or not?
It could be if that organization would like to move forward and provide assistance to the ranchers. They've done a good job. That's not to say that because a third party hasn't existed that a lot of work hasn't been done by the RCD, UC Cooperative Extension, and others in the watershed to kind of share and bring people up to speed on what's appropriate for their site and their conditions. In terms of the dairy quality group that was brought forth in a comment letter back in 2004, I believe, on the original TMDL.
Yeah, and it was resubmitted as part of this.
And it was resubmitted as part of this package. They have not approached us, although we are working on our confined animal facility permit renewal. And if they have a nexus with that in terms of the dairy program that permit will regulate, we'll certainly consider them for inclusion as a viable third party.
So if I may restate what I think you just said, if the parties who are promoting this program want to work with us to create something that could be approved as a third-party program, we would be delighted to see them.
We would be delighted. Exactly. Thank you.
I think that covers about two-thirds of what I had the same question. For that to work, there would have to be presumably some kind of demonstration that it's effective, and there would have to be third-party monitoring, both of which have been anticipated and provided, as my memory, in the fish-friendly farming. But should the Western United Dairymen, who made the comment, provide substantive information that it provides, that I mean, I love the idea because it is something that people use to identify themselves in the marketplace, and it has market value for them.
Correct.
So all that remains to do is for them to cross the T's and dot the I's to show that it's actually effective in some kind of third-party system.
Correct. And
we would be willing to work with that.
Yes, sir. And as Laurent pointed out, there's a template that we've approved that we have posted to our website that was developed by the UC Cooperative Extension and a group of people back in following the 2008 adoption of that first permit. Okay. And if what the program proposes is in line with the elements of that plan, I would see no problem with that at all.
Okay. Vice Chair?
I'm still going here.
Yep. No problem.
Submission from the California Cattlemen talked about or recommended that we adopt or approve photo monitoring protocols developed by the UC Extension, and that mentioned that they had a sediment delivery inventory and monitoring worksheet and several other things. Now, I looked at the alternate ranch water quality plan that is available on the website. If you don't want to do the short form in F, you can do the more complete one. And look to me like we already talked about photo monitoring points in here. So I wonder if you could just provide us some more background on that.
I'm not sure if Laurent, you want to?
Well, I mean, in terms of the photo guide monitoring, we endorse the fact sheet that the UC Extension has put together. That basically what it does is it provides pictures as well as tables for minimum RDM thresholds. And I am also familiar with the sediment worksheet, the sediment delivery worksheet. I know of its existence. I have not used it in the field yet, in terms of. But I, you know, in terms of us endorsing that that work product, I don't have any problem with it.
So my takeaway on that would be that if there is something that will work for us that is not currently in either one of our templates, we would be happy to consider it, adopt it as part of a new or revised template. And if they want to work with us to do that, we'll do that.
That's correct. And there's two sets of photo documentation. There's the on-site for best management practices for a site inspection, and then those that may be involved with residual dry matter measurement. There's three methods to do that generally accepted, and we didn't specify the method. One could do their own assessment by clipping a plot and projecting that across their site. Another one would be photo documentation, where you take a photo, you compare it to a photo set of residual dry matter and make a calculation. And then a third would involves a pole and different things that you place in the grass to see if you can still see them from some distance. So that's another type of visual technique. So, correct, we would be open to other means of measuring and reporting that.
All right, thank you. One last question. This seems to be a pattern that we go through when we start a new program. We spend much of the first phase just kind of gathering everybody in and making sure everyone knows what their responsibilities are. And then sort of partway through that permit or at the next permit, we get into a phase where we go more into the field and we're able to see what's really going on. And I gather that that's sort of where we are now with this grazing permit. So can you just talk a little bit to us about how you're going to set your priorities for where you're going to go first and who you're going to look at and all of that?
It's Jim Ponton with planning, and Laurent, you can chime in. We as Laurent showed on his map, there are several properties that have not responded to our initial request for information. So I think they would be those properties would be a priority for us. Those were shown, I think, in beige on the map or pink.
Yep.
And
brown, actually.
And also we have had the requirement for annual reporting. So we have received some annual reports from different parties. And in 2011, we wrote a letter just to remind people that they need to do this. So I think that's probably an approach we may take as a reminder that this permit is in place and that they need to that parties need to report on it. And then the other element would be to integrate the water quality data that we have in the watershed with the locations in the watershed where we have parcels in the program, and identify priorities that in that manner. So it would be the non-reporters to remind people to report, or the non-responders to remind people to report, and then field visits based on water quality information that we have to date.
Good, thank you.
And I guess one other element to add to that is that there have been a number of state board grants that have been provided to the Marin Resource Conservation District for implementation of management practices on various parcels. And so we've been involved in going on site to verify sort of the pre and post construction of those management practices.
Good, thank you.
Okay. Yes, Board Member McGrath.
Terry is remarkably thorough, but that doesn't surprise anybody. There's one question that I had that she didn't cover, which is the monitoring. The data is not robust, and I know that we don't want to unduly burden the agricultural interests with a monitoring program and the costs of that. So I'd like a little bit of insight on two things. Are they currently paying, are people who take advantage of the waiver currently paying for off-site monitoring as opposed to demonstration that they're implementing the ranch management plan? And then second, what are the prospects for improved monitoring data? Because a number of the comments from all different sides indicated that we would be better off with better information, and I agree. Maybe now is not the time, but I kind of want a little bit of the fiscal picture.
In terms of the enrollees in the current permit, they do not pay into a monitoring program. In terms of our willingness and our interest in meeting with people that are more experienced in local conditions in the watershed, and to help us refine our understanding of the conditions, we're excited about being able to do that in the future. I think you'll hear comments both in the package and also following this that we'll ask that as well, commenters.
So the monitoring program that's now done is being done with grant funds?
It's some of it that is done through grant funds. The Tomas Bay Watershed Council has done their monitoring, and then we do our internal monitoring through our laboratory contract and staff time.
And the scale of that roughly, is it kind of like 10,000 or 10, kind of like 100,000 or kind of like a million?
I don't have those numbers, but I would guess it's more like the 10,000 number or less.
So there's not a lot of monitoring and looking for resources to improve monitoring strategically might be a priority.
I'm sorry.
So it might be a priority in terms of achieving this to focus some of our efforts on improving access to monitoring funds.
That's correct. And we currently have 16 stations that we monitor throughout the watershed. And as it was brought to our attention through the comments, each sub-watershed of the region, and because of precipitation and how it's laid out, it's a lot of variability there. So through our field efforts and through our working with more experts in the watershed, we hope to refine our understanding and maybe relocate sites or add to that.
Of course, as sensors get cheaper and cheaper and they get more and more tied to smartphones, the cost of monitoring drops. So we might get better data cheaper if we wait a little while.
I was just going to add that we do have some additional monitoring we're doing through the swamp program spot at some of the bottom of the watershed, and then we're also doing some additional work on Walker Creek, some monitoring for the mercury aspects. So we would love to work with the community to sort of see about comprehensively reviewing the data that we have and looking at how we can refocus some of those resources and try to find additional resources if possible, if need be.
You have worked with a hydrologic model to kind of tailor what the TMDL was. And so in terms of monitoring and cost effectiveness, we could look at that results and how monitoring would enable that model to be much more finely tuned and verified.
I'm going to let Diane answer that.
Yeah, the focus of that monitoring was really to get a better understanding of what was happening at the shellfish growing areas. And one of the goals of the TMDL was really to reduce the number of closure days. And those closure days are now based on a fairly outdated formula that needs to be updated by Department of Health Services, which simply links rainfall amount to closures based on 10, 20-year-old data now about a link between pathogen concentrations and potential risk and runoff. So it is a fairly complicated situation out there, and DHS chooses a fairly conservative approach to protect the shellfish consumer, though there are certainly other efforts that are underway out there with the growers themselves monitoring what's happening at the beds. And so we're looking at reducing pathogen inputs from the watershed during rain events, which is a tricky scenario in terms of data gathering because you really want to be out there during peak flows. And then we're looking at trying to link what's happening out there to concentrations at very specific locations in the bay where shellfish harvesting is going on. So this is kind of a longer-term collaborative project that we need to be working closely with Department of Health Service and the growers on if really our end goal here is to keep the shellfish beds open as many days as is feasible during the wet season. The dry season data is a whole nother picture, and I think that our data sets give a much better reflection of what's going on during that period of time. But as you can imagine, there's less of an issue in terms of runoff during that period. So I think that is really the challenge for this next phase, is to start to see what we can do with DHS along these lines.
Thank you, Diane. I think that presents the board and the public with a really good idea of what the balancing that's being done here, and I appreciate that.
Good. Board Member Habakova?
How does this program compare with what other regional boards are doing with similar circumstances?
You know, one thing about this program and why we were one of the first regions to tackle this from a TMDL perspective has to do with our shellfish growing beds in Tomales Bay. Given that we're driven by having a lower water quality objective in place than would be the case if we were simply protecting for recreational uses. So one could say we've been a little bit ahead of the curve there, and we've been on top of it just because we're driven by the beneficial uses at hand. In terms of the program itself, using the approach of a waiver, that's essentially where most of the other regional boards are going along this line with grazing. And in terms of the type of practices that are being employed, that's pretty much standard practice in terms of what's coming out from the groups that are working with the ranching community in terms of what can be done. So I would say fairly consistent in that regard, but maybe some additional protective measures that we are looking at with ranches that are closer to the creeks or directly discharging to the bay, which is why the grant funding has come to this watershed and why many of the ranchers in this watershed have been taking the lead in the state in terms of looking at innovative approaches to waste management.
So I'm going to have Jim mention there is also a statewide grazing program underway. He has more details on that.
Right. Thanks, Diane, Naomi. There's a grazing work group that Naomi just mentioned that's been put together. It's represented by all of the regions throughout the state, the nine regions, with state board representation, to look at ways to, to listen and to get information as to ways to best regulate or manage grazing activities. It's a common activity statewide. Few other regions have a permit that regulates grazing. We're one of the first. Region 6 had a prohibition at one point that moved cattle out of a sub-watershed. Region 5, I believe, has an irrigated aspect, and ours is both irrigated and non-irrigated pasture. In terms of the where that work group will go, they're embarking on listening sessions with focus groups to get information, and its final form has not been determined as to what that will lead to, but there is a statewide effort for this concern.
And And we, I asked at the outset about folks that are on land that's less than 50 acres, and the answer was, well, we'd look at it if there was an indication of water quality impacts. What about someone on the other extreme where they're eligible for the waiver, at least just on paper, but the way their practices are, they're having impacts. Would you, in that circumstance, take them out of the waiver program and then have a waste discharge requirement imposed?
Right. So one example would be the waiver is predicated on the fact that people will comply with its conditions and employ best management practices report. If in the event that our field inspections or we are provided information that demonstrates that people are not complying with the conditions of the waiver, we'll look at ways to put them under individual permits.
And have there been folks on the other end of that spectrum that have had to have WDRs issued?
We don't have any.
We haven't had that experience yet. Our inspections in the watershed have been limited to date.
The tentative order that's before you does allow for us to put someone under an individual WDR if necessary.
Yeah. And for the dairy program, which is not totally disconnected from this, we have historically taken the approach that we've had both a waiver and general waste discharge requirements, and those who comply with the conditions of the waiver do so. If there are problems, then there are more rigorous requirements than the general WDRs that we move them into.
And those conditions that I was mentioning, they're enforceable under the waiver, so we have that capacity as well.
Thank you very much.
So I have a quick question and a quick comment. Question is, do we have any idea, this is an amazing 68,000 acres out in that watershed, how much is privately owned and publicly owned as a question? And then as a comment, I do appreciate slide 15 there with the RDM. This is, in my opinion, it really is related to the weather world that we're in. And let me tell you, I imagine those animals are eating rocks out there right now, you know, and they do need some grass. So I think we have to be very sensitive to that watershed, that we do need some moisture to make the grasses grow, and I understand the rotating of the grazing, but
I think
it's really weather-related, in my opinion.
Right, and that's key because, again, we don't want to use the RDM as a regulatory trigger. It's more of an indicator for the rancher as to when actions need to be taken place. So in a year like this, it would be very different than a wet year or different places in the watershed. So we don't want to set up one specific number. We want to use it as a tool.
Thank you. And I don't know if we had any idea on the private public.
That's right. So, you know, that...
The light was bothering us at the time.
So we did some statistic, you know, kind of a review yesterday, and we looked at, you know, the average parcel size that are enrolled under the NOI, and the arithmetic mean is about 300 acres. So in terms of your question for, you know, the distribution between private and public, so the notice of intent are in green, and then the public lands are hashed. So you can, you know, derive here, you know, from a graphical point of view, probably about, I would say, like 85% of the lands are private, and probably about 15, you know, are hashed and are green, basically, are going to be public.
Thank you. If there's no further questions with staff at the moment, we'll move on to the comments here. And the first one, David Lewis, please come forward. And then Jerry Korda could follow.
Good morning to you, Chair, board members. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm David Lewis, the Watershed Management Advisor for the University of California Cooperative Extension.
He's not David Lewis of Save the Bay. That's a different thing. But he does want to save the bay, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm before you both, you know, as a partner, as a collaborator with you, but also as a representative of what I call the Tomales Bay Conservation Partnership, a group of 9 agricultural support organizations and regional board staff that worked really hand in hand on the early TMDL and the previous waiver, and are here again today to say we're here to work with you going forward. So as I share that with you, I just want to take a few minutes and can answer if there's some questions you have of me, but just wanted you to appreciate how special Tomales Bay Watershed is and talk to you about a few technical notes with regard to this waiver. Well, it's the land of oysters and blue cheese. It's the land of the first organic dairy west of the Mississippi, the land of a really precedent-setting land trust organization, Marin Agricultural Land Trust. It's actually home to one of the southernmost populations of coho salmon, and most recently, actually, Chinook salmon have been sighted. It's a birder's paradise in terms of both migratory birds and endemic species. And all of this is because of the open and connected lands that we have there and the commitment to working landscapes as well. And that's part of the 40-year history of having this watershed become the special place that it is. So before you take on your vote today and renew this conditional waiver, I do want to cover just a few items and really share with you the progress and accomplishments in land stewardship to date to enhance this special place. So on a technical note and to reiterate the points about residual dry matter, it's important that over time we are consistent on this, that RDM not be construed or promulgated as a threshold or a criteria for water quality. This is an important point to know that we're all on the same page about what RDM is in this waiver and what it is as a management tool, because that's what it's intended to be and that's what it was designed for. But this is a step that could, 10 years from now when none of us are here, result in it becoming a water quality threshold. As of yet, RDM has not been connected via data to ambient stream conditions. So I just want to reemphasize that. We need to be careful and diligent over time about that. And the point's been made about why RDM's different over time and each year. And, you know, envision a fire, wild or prescribed. Envision annual precipitation. Envision the need to manage for specific weed species and why you might change the vegetation amounts on a year-to-year basis. So there are reasons why we would go below what might be recommended levels of residual dry matter. With regard to stewardship, I just think it's important to put before you, the regional board staff, and again, the collaborators in this Tomales Bay Conservation Partnership, all that's been accomplished since the passing of the pathogen TMDL in 2005 and then the waiver in 2008. And I want to acknowledge both Mr. Millier and Mr. Ponton's efforts to make this acknowledgement in the report and in the waiver. So this includes things like the successful implementation of over 37 management practices on farm and planned 48 practices to be implemented by 2014. Those practices will complement already a portfolio of accomplishments that include 40 miles of stream fenced and revegetated, the prevention of delivery of 700,000 cubic yards of fine sediment to the waterway, and other benefits that we can talk about over time and practices, the suite of practices that were shared in the presentation. Those have been implemented for really almost a 40-year period of planning on farm ranching and then implementing the practices. It includes some other things, the most notably and really prominently in kind of the southern end of the bay, the restoration of 500 acres of tidal wetland by the National Park Service and other partners, in its way improving the function of that watershed and of the estuary. It includes the development and implementation of trend monitoring, water quality monitoring. I heard your questions about that today, so the Watershed Council was mentioned, and that data is at least 5 years long now and more robust than we were in 2005 and in 2008. There's also data sets from the National Park Service, data sets from the Marin Environmental Health Service. So we may not be as fully robust as we want to be, are we ever, as watershed scientists, but we have a lot more data now than we did in 2005, and I'll come back to that point in a minute about what I think we can do, the opportunity ahead for us. In talking about those monitoring opportunities, it's important to emphasize that a lot of that work was funded by the State Water Resources Control Board and bond measures over time. So, again, collaborative effort, good use of resources to help us learn about the watershed. In talking about that water quality data, also it's important to know that most of it's been done under quality assurance program standards, done to meet SWAMP, and I think could easily translate into the CEDIN program because it's now in a EPA store it database anyway. So hopefully those are commensurate or can talk to each other. Accomplishments include research on the dynamics of pathogen delivery across the Walker Creek and Lagunitas Creek watersheds, and that again was a bond measure supported project, and so we have a rigorous data set there and an understanding of how rainfall and tides influence concentrations of pathogens across that interface. Additionally, the field of conservation practice effectiveness has really grown. It's matured. There's good science, good data to understand how vegetative buffers work and how much benefit we get in terms of reducing pathogen loading. And that's just one practice, one example. But in the last 10, 12, 15 years, there's been a lot of work done nationally, regionally, and in the Tomales Bay watershed. So that's another source of great information that really helps us and would inform us about when we implement practices, what we can expect. I guess lastly, you know, is what's been accomplished. I can hit upon a couple other things, but you can look at the numbers different ways, but as I look at the numbers, I see an 88% participation in the first round of the conditional waiver. I see, 97 folks that have submitted both notices of intents and annual certifications, and 48 that have come under the notice of non-applicability. I think, admittedly, have they consistently done that every year is a fair question, and that it requires some more work with the ranchers and farmers. But for a self-certified program as opposed to third party, I think we should look at that as a success and how to build on that success. And so I guess then I'll as I've shared with you these accomplishments, one technical note about RDM, I just want to kind of enlist all of us in a challenge, and somewhat of a technical one, that we use this information and data with even previous data. There's data in the 70s, 80s, and data collected in the 90s to conduct what I think you formally call a use attainability analysis. But what I'm just saying is to really in-depth take an in-depth evaluation of where we're at and what we have accomplished and if we've made a difference from a water quality perspective. I think the time is right to try to do this. Just as the original grazing waiver and in your discussion about where this board versus other boards, the original grazing waiver was precedent setting. I mean, it was one of the first in the state, if not the first. I think just as that was precedent setting, the time is right to take this next precedent setting step and do this level of analysis with at least the data we have that would inform us about further monitoring that we might want to invest in. It certainly will take, skilled statistical analysis, but that ability is there in numbers of partners and including your staff. It may involve source tracking, something that conventional wisdom and discussion had taken off the table before, and I was part of that discussion. It may be time now as the costs have come down. It may take formal risk assessment. Those are some things that the Department of Health Services and others could involve. And it will certainly be collaborative, but I think the time is right that we start to explore how we can do that and really look to see where we're at with this pathogen TMDL and the benefit that the ranching community has had on their farms and ranches to obtaining it. With that, I'm happy to answer any other questions about California Dairy Quality Assurance Program or anything else. So.
Board members, you all right? I would just like to say, if you look at history and cooperative extension, I believe it started right here in Berkeley, next door here. And for that area to have, and cooperative extension has been hammered with budget cuts over the years, in my opinion. And for them to have David Lewis out there, you're damn lucky. Let me just say that. You've done a great job out there. And I know how difficult it is and how private enterprise is looking for all good, talented people. So thanks for sticking it out. And hopefully cooperative extension will build back up a little better than it has been the last 10, 15 sure. years. So just want to compliment you on that because your work is never going to be done and you're trying to to please all parties in your neutral capacity, but I think he's done a pretty good job getting it going. And
it's pretty amazing to have one watershed that has an active, very active community of not only the UC Cooperative Extension, but the RCD and the NRCS. It's a lot of government programs, hopefully providing assistance.
And I believe between staff and your presentation, you gave us a great background and in a great direction of where we're trying to get this thing. And now we'll actually have Jerry come forward, the guy that really milks the cows and lets them eat the grass if there's any out there to eat. And again, I believe this family's probably been there over 100 years in the area of that quarter name, if I...
Yes, correct. Good morning, Chairman Mueller and board. My family's been in the dairy ranching business since 1884, so it's been a while back there. Like I said, my name is Jerry.
Jerry, would you give us your name and address, please?
My name is Jerry Korda. I live at 5493 Redwood Highway South, Petaluma, California. I'm a fifth-generation dairyman. We operate Korda Family Dairy with my mom and my brother. In Marin County near San Antonio Creek. I'm here on behalf of Marin County Farm Bureau today. The Marin County Farm Bureau appreciates the opportunity to comment on the proposed water, the waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing operations in the Tamales Bay watershed. Farm Bureau would like to acknowledge that Marin County's farmers and ranchers are excellent stewards of the land, rangelands provide habitat, open space, water quality benefits, and numerous other ecosystem services. With respect to the draft waiver, however, Farm Bureau's views is that it must be substantially modified. It appears that the board is considering renewal of the 2008 waiver without much change, except for the addition of a requirement to monitor and report on residual dry matter. In the 2008, Farm Bureau raised a number of concerns with the waiver then proposed, including the questionable importance of grazing contributions to coliform contamination relative to background or baseline levels of wildlife contributions, and whether the TMDL requirements for grazing was lower than the wildlife control from an earlier technical study. At that time, Farm Bureau indicated that the waiver's burden on agriculture through management practices, inspections, reporting, and the like are onerous at the farm level and of questionable value given the uncertainties of data which underpinned the waiver. Farm Bureau renews these concerns during the current waiver process. The draft waiver appears to note that conditions have improved throughout the watershed during the recent period, and we believe it would be appropriate to both relax some of the more onerous requirements in the 2013 waiver as respects grazing operators, as well as conduct further study to ground the waiver and future waivers in a solid scientific grounding that will enable effective regulation calculated to address the true source of impairments without unfairly intruding upon the viability of family grazing operations that have been effective stewards of the landscape for generations. Please consider these comments on behalf of the Marin County Farm Bureau. And thank you for your time, and hopefully, like the chairman said earlier, the rain we really do need to get that grass growing keep our cows happy. Thank you.
Yeah, Hang on, Speaker. Board Member Brown.
Any questions?
I did read the 2008 comment letter about onerous requirements, and one of the notes that I had put is, can we be specific? I mean, I'm certainly very interested in keeping a viable agricultural community in West Marin County, both on public and private land. I think it's got values that are tremendous. And so I'm very interested in specifics about what you believe are onerous burdens and specifics on what specifically you think needs to be relaxed and why. So general comments aren't quite so helpful. Specifics about things that you think impair the viability of the land, I'm certainly here to listen.
Good question. Do you want to tackle that, Jerry, or you want David to kind of stand by you there?
Dave, you want to?
Yeah. You're the man on the land. Yeah.
I do think this will be better if you want to have follow-up with Farm Bureau about what these points are about. I do think that there's concerns, and only time will tell, with the inspections. How do those go? How do they work? We haven't had them yet, and so I think there's concerns about that, meaning the ranchers just haven't had that interaction with staff to understand it. There is a mountain of paperwork already as a farmer and rancher, and so trying to keep this streamlined and simple is also part of that word onerous. And I think we've navigated that in the first round, in the first waiver, and I think you honoring and keeping that level of simplicity is part of it as well. So I think I don't want to speak for Farm Bureau, and I don't know what else you want to add, Jerry.
Yeah, well, like you said, the paperwork, there is a lot of stuff we do, monitoring every day now, even with just the water quality stuff that we do on a yearly basis, not even implementing the watershed stuff that we're talking about now. Each dairy operator has to give reports into the water district every year, twice a year, actually, for some of us. And if hopefully it's not a duplicate of paperwork, but to continue doing the work we do on the ranch and to get more overburdened with more paperwork, like I said, we've got enough just to keep up taking care of our animals and managing the land to make sure that we provide a safe and nutritious product for the consumer. So with that, anybody else has something to add?
Vice Chair, staff.
Yes, Mr. Korda, thank you. And so we pulled up the letter from 2008 from the Marin County Farm Bureau, and one of the issues that they raised as being excessive were the number of were the compliance monitoring and reporting. Under compliance monitoring and reporting, it would be the site inspections, the ranch inspections that they have to do, that the ranchers need to do, and that the pre-storm and actual storm inspections were too much. And that was one point raised. And we do have in our compliance monitoring requirements of the tentative order on page 17, we do have the requirement for ranchers to do inspections in the dry season, at least twice during the dry season, and then monthly during the rainy season, and before and after, preferably before a forecasted storm event, to make sure everything is set up for the rainy season, similar to what we do for stormwater program for the industrial permit. And then they have follow-up inspections after significant rains to make sure everything's functioning properly. And what we learned through talking to people is that lots of times those inspections happen anyway, not necessarily for this reason, but to make sure the animals are okay and that nothing has gone haywire because of the storm. So we maintain that in this current version of the permit.
Don't feel it's that burdensome to do that compliance and reporting.
I do appreciate that. One of the comments that I read, and I read this whole packet very carefully because it was precedent setting, and I was here in 2008, but we don't want to hammer the agricultural community, is that I think the staff made a good point in response that You want a dry season, what's the condition of the best management practices? And then you want a report on erosion, not during a storm. I think that was an entirely reasonable request to relax that. But after a storm event, where it is in your interest to deal with that erosion. And I think what we are trying to do is make sure that the monitoring has minimal paperwork and mirrors those decisions that you're making anyway to properly manage your land, and that reflects our understanding and belief that you are the first line of stewardship on the land. That's something that I think we all believe.
Right, and I thank you for that. And like I said, I think the overall project itself is helping more ranchers be involved in the fact that it's helping them with the land that they've been maintaining for years. But this is just another tool, I think, along the line that's very beneficial, not only to the ranchers, but to the community in general.
Thank you, Vice Chair. We also have one more card.
Okay. I just wanted to echo what Jim said, and perhaps I'll do that in the closing comments. But this is an important example of a regulatory program that we needed to implement for water quality purposes, but we were bringing in a whole lot of people who hadn't had a direct relationship with us before, and we have to do it right. So let's get the final comment.
And Gordon Bennett, please.
Hi, my name is Gordon Bennett. I was here in 2008 for the first grazing waiver on testifying on behalf of the Sierra Club. I'm here representing Save Our Seashore now. We submitted comments on this grazing waiver. I'm also, our organization is also a member of the Tomales Bay Watershed Council, and I am currently chair of the Lagunitas TAC, which is advisory to MMWD pursuant to Water Board 9517 order. So I don't mean to be a skunk at the garden party, but the data that you have really doesn't show improvement. It's not clear what it shows. You've got some improvement on some small creeks that are in public hands where the access is really easy. And you've got some mixed messages on the big creeks that deliver a lot of stuff into the bay. The net result is that the closures for the shellfish industry in the bay have been trending up. Now, it is also true that those closure measures are probably bad, but the trend is up, and it's up in all of the measurement stations. So I have no doubt that there's good work that has been done in the watershed. There are ranchers that want to do good things and have been doing good things, but it is not enough. And the comments on the wildlife, you heard those last time in 2008 also. With all due respect, that's a red herring. It may be that if the wildlife contributes a lot of coliform, that the metric for compliance needs to be adjusted. But it doesn't matter how many deer are pooping in the creek. It's still illegal for your cow to poop in the creek. So the emphasis on source tracking is interesting, but it is not a factor as regards to what should be done on the ranches. And what should be done on the ranches is very difficult to measure when you've got one measurement at the bottom of the creek and you've got 27 guys above it. You've got five guys that are doing great and five guys that might be doing terrible stuff. And there's no way to measure that from one point on the bottom. And that's the problem with your metrics now. The measurements are taken accurately. The data says what it does, but it's very hard to figure out what's going on in the watershed. So the only way to do that is to get boots on the ground. And in 2008, you promised the environmental community and the ranchers you would have boots on the ground, and you did have boots on the ground, but the ground was here in Oakland. You need boots on the ground in West Marin. You need folks to go out there and look at these ranches and work with the ranchers in a cooperative way to encourage them to do the right thing. And there's no way you can do that from looking at the data. You need to get out and on the ranches. You need to walk up the waterways. You need to walk on the roads. You need to be out there with the folks. And having said that, I would like to encourage you, as you folks have said earlier, to be a little compassionate with the ranchers out there. I mean, I'm an environmentalist. I want the things cleaned up. But I don't want to put the ranchers out of business. And if you're any experience with herding cows, you know that the way to get them to go in the right direction is not to run in with your guns blazing, because you'll start a stampede, and that may go in the wrong direction. What you need is a firm, gentle, but persistent move in the right direction. So that's what I'm encouraging you to do. Get boots on the ground, be gentle, persuasive, but let's get them moving in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was interesting. I had that as a question also. I mean, with staff reductions over a period of time, that's the next thing. I mean, how many people do we have to, quote unquote, get the boots on the ground? That's the key is, you know, we can only do so much. From my perspective, I think we've started in the right direction. But as we see in the regulatory community, again, my opinion is that it takes a long time to get to the end. It really does. But it's a start. And I think since 2008, we're starting to try to get in that right direction. So anyhow, that's just my comment at the moment.
I just wanted to reinforce what Bruce Wolf said about the fact that through our 319 grant program, we do have on staff Leslie Ferguson, active with the RCD, sort of, she is boots on the ground in many ways out at Tamales Bay and in the watershed. And so we do look at all the, we've been there active since 2008, our grant program providing support both through Point Reyes Seashore and for the ranchers in terms of implementing management practices and looking at before and after and how they're done. And then, as we said, we do fully intend to have a serious presence in the watershed through with an inspection program in 2014 and beyond.
And just again, my opinion in observation, and we're talking about wildlife in the Bay Area with the reduction of habitat over the last, you know, 40, 50 years. Trust me, there's a lot of critters out there, whether it's a raccoon. I mean, we're seeing possums, and the first time in our recent memory, we're seeing foxes and coyotes, and I guess they have the elk situation out there and the deer. I mean, they do have to contribute to it, and I'm not saying that we want our animals to be in the creeks, but there's a lot of critters out there too, and I'm sure you will respond to that.
Well, I could say I think that's why I fully support staff going out there and spending more time looking at conditions in the field, because you can learn more from visual observation sometimes out there than you can by spending tens of thousands of dollars collecting water quality samples. We certainly need water quality data to go hand in hand with that, but certainly what we're looking for when we're out there is clear evidence that of domesticated animals and livestock, use of the creeks, which is where we're most concerned about pathogen transport. And then the other note, of course, is that we are also working out there quite a bit on septic tank related issues, and there's been great strides making improvements in the watershed too, which was also noted as another significant source of pathogens in that watershed. So that's a whole nother program, but we are actively involved in that one as well.
Good. Any other questions or comments?
Chair Mueller, can I one last
yes,
thing?
Sure.
Naomi Fager again. One thing that was said was talked about the closures and the increases in closures out in Tamales Bay, and Diane talked a little bit about what we're looking at in terms of dry and wet weather, but I wanted to reinforce that currently closures are based on rainfall, and when it's just set at a certain amount of rainfall, it's an automatic closure during the wet season, so that we need to get back out there with the Department of Health and Public Health and or it's DHS, I guess, and do a sanitary survey and figure out whether or not we can change that trigger for closures based on what we're seeing in terms of rainfall events and pathogen loading to the Tamales Bay.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've given this some fair time and discussion on that. I don't know if the board member, vice chair, you have any other questions or comments?
I would like to move approval of the waiver and then make some comments after there's a second.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Now discussion, please.
Yeah, first of all, as we were talking about before, it's difficult when the regional board is thrust into a community where we didn't have a presence before. We want to have a smart regulatory program that is effective in solving the problem that we're supposed to be solving, but doesn't turn into a complete headache for everybody who's living out there. So, and we want it to be cost effective. So we do, I think, try very hard to create a program that parallels the type of work that the good rangeland managers would be doing anyway. And probably they have to write a lot more down just because we have to require that. But hopefully we're not requiring people to do something that they think is just completely stupid, because that would be counterproductive. I think we all do appreciate the multiple benefits of working rangelands and the habitat that they provide for wildlife. When you think of the alternative of going to almost any other land use other than parkland, wildlife would be a lot worse off, and probably water quality too. So we do appreciate that. But we have to address the water quality problem. So what do we do? As I look at this package, and as I looked at it the first time that we adopted it, we have standards that we say should be met in the creek. And the standards are written in the form of minimize this, minimize that, try really hard to do this, try really hard to do that. There's nothing specific in there. Then we have a set of implementation requirements, which are basically do smart management practices to implement the minimize this, minimize that standards that we had. And it is all very logical and well-researched, but it's very nonspecific. And there's an advantage to being flexible. The RCDs, the NRCS, all of the UC Extension, they all favor the sort of flexible, do what makes sense on your own piece of property programs, and that's a good thing. On the other hand, the flexibility has some disadvantages in a regulatory program, which I think we all understand, which is uncertainty. You know, you can be a rancher out there, and you can say, well, they're saying to minimize this and minimize that. Well, how do I know when I've done enough? And how do I know when it's right? And how do I know that, talking about 10 years from now, our wonderful staff has all disappeared and some yahoos come in and start implementing this stuff in a way that we think is completely crazy? So from the ranch owner's perspective, I think having a little more certainty is a good thing. From the regulatory program side, having a little more certainty in terms of specific measurable objective requirements is also a good thing. I mean, so we kind of all know where the bar is. That's my lead up for being a cheerleader for the residual dry matter requirement, the requirement to measure residual dry matter and use it as an indicator, not as a regulatory trigger, but as an indicator. Because I'm looking for as many of these things that we can measure objectively as possible so that we create certainty for the ranchers and certainty for and some bookends for the regional board staff as to what it is that we're expecting, and so that people don't think we're unreasonable. I fully support the way that the staff on page C3 of the comments said that we were going to be using residual dry matter. It was paralleled today in the presentation and in the discussion. The fact that we have photo monitoring protocols available in our longer form of F of the ranch plan, I think is a good thing because people can look at pictures and tell a whole lot. So I guess that's my message, is that I'm going to vote for this waiver, but I would like to see, as we go through time, more and more of those specific measurable items included in these packages, and I would like to see them generated from the grazing community and from the UC Extension and the RCDs and the people who know what's going on in the land, because they're much more expert than any of us are, and we recognize that. So I'm comfortable with what we have. It's a little too vague for me still, but I think it's the best we can do under the circumstances. And as you heard earlier in the responses to the questions that we asked, our staff is very motivated to keep improving this program, and there are lots of opportunities to keep improving this program even after we adopt the waiver. There's a lot of flexibility to put in to place third-party programs, to put in other alternative ranch plan templates, to, you know, do all sorts of things. And I would encourage everybody who has something they don't like to get back to us and work with us. The reporting requirements are not set in stone, and I know they seem like a lot. I think the staff has tried to make the reporting requirements parallel what the really good ranch managers would be doing anyway. But, you know, there's always room for improvement. So I guess I didn't like reading that somebody thought this was onerous, because I couldn't tell why it would be onerous from reading the package. But we can work on it. Anyway, that's all I have to say. It's more than enough, I'm sure.
No, it's very good comments. We have a motion and a second. Any further comments? Yeah, Board Member.
I want to put a few things on the record. You know, I have a very soft spot in my heart for West Marin County. My graduate work was on sediment movement and wetland preservation, and a lot of it was in Marin County around Tamales Bolinas, the next system to the north or the south, as names escape me. One of the things that we need to keep in mind is the natural landscape here is highly altered. It's no longer coastal redwoods for the most part. It's been modified for consumptive purposes, yet it retains a tremendous value. I've bicycled, you know, hundreds of miles on those roads. I've studied kind of the mechanisms of sediment transport. And one of my bicycle companions in the metric centuries and the centuries that I've done in West Marin is Tom Mickelson, who was one of the resource managers at the East Bay Regional Park District. In an altered landscape like this, we absolutely need grazing. The East Bay Regional Park District uses grazing, sometimes with great controversy with environmental groups, but in an altered landscape where there are introduced grasses, you don't have the natural sequence of systems. You need grazing as a tool on both public and private lands, and it is an act of stewardship, and it's doing it right that really matters. It may be as simple as keep the cows out of the streams, and until we know that's been done and it's not enough and there's not a natural background, I'm reluctant to go much tougher, because I think there is stewardship. So grazing is a vital part of how we're going to manage these lands successfully and retain their habitat value. I've walked most of the coast. I've seen, you know, grazing on Point Reyes and you know, tremendous habitat values, overflights of white pelicans that, you know, bring your heart to your mouth. So it is important to have these things. I must note, as a sediment guy, the technical soundness of RDM as an information point in managing land. I'm confident with what the staff has said today that a natural reason for reduced residual management, such as a drought, will not be used as a regulatory trigger. That's very clear to me. And I'm also confident that there are needs to graze heavily in some cases to manage the vegetation over the long term. That's absolutely sound, and the technical underpinnings are heavy in the literature. That's also a measure. So it's not here. I would ask the agricultural community to keep track and be more specific on what they find onerous. I know that with the controversy over the closure of oysters in Point Reyes, that there is a sentiment of some that some people want to end agriculture and agricultural grazing. Certainly not my view, and certainly not anything that I would ever support. As I said, to manage lands of these value, for the habitat value they have, the open space they have, the temperature benefits they have, the food benefits they have, we need grazing. So I know my staff well enough to know that they listen well. Talk to them, and if you don't like what you hear, talk to us. I'm going to support the staff recommendation. I think they got it right. And I would like to single out David Lewis, who is just as articulate as the other David Lewis and captures some of the poetry of the landscape, which I think is valuable in bringing us all together. It is that stewardship of that poetry.
So. Very good. I guess my comments would be, I just wish a large majority of those property owners could be in this room today and hear what comments have been going on and what testimony has been given, and the amazing wisdom of my fellow board members that have regarding this precious part of the world out there. And I think as I look at this little calf steer, her little bull guy, I would hope, you know, future generations will be able to see these little guys up on the hills. But yet, again, as the vice chair said, our role is to protect the environment, too. So, you know, we're really kind of in a hard spot. We want to just have all these little guys running around the hills out there, but yet we got to don't go in the creek and don't go there. And then you got the Corda family has been running dairies for the 1800s, and I don't know how much longer they can do it either. So do you want to run them out of business? I don't know. I mean, it's a tough position we're in. As I said earlier, I think we started. It's not perfect, as the vice chair said. She wants to see some of those things. And when you hear Farm Bureau's comments on onerous situations, with all respect to Farm Bureau, you know, they're very, very entrenched in property values and private land and all that stuff. And I know four family members as president of Farm Bureau that it was hard for us to change from that mentality. And trust me, I'm not perfect. And every time I think we're doing something right on the farm, I realize maybe I'm screwing up too. You know, so we got to be very, very careful. So I think it's a good start. And we've heard this. We've been given fair testimony and the patience for the next item of them. And so I'll call for the roll call vote, please, on the staff's recommendation and the motion.
Board Member Kissinger?
Aye.
Board Member Abikoga?
Aye.
Board Member McGrath?
Aye.
Vice Chair Young?
Aye.
Chair Mueller?
Aye. So ordered. And I believe we do have to do some rotating of the tables, and maybe we'll take a 5-minute, very, very quick break for shifting to the next item.
Right. Since this next item does have separate functions, we want to provide space at the table for all parties.